We don't bite much.
Just don't make me hyper-elastic.
Exactly.
Yeah, that image jumped out at me. I was Googling, has anyone done anything on hyper-elasticity?
As a quick brief intro, Jay's here representing Sprint Nextel, and Jerry's from the law firm Wilson, Sonsini, Goodrich, and Rosati. First question, we'll just direct towards our new guests, Jerry and Jay. Please tell us about your organization briefly and how its work is relevant to our topic today, mobile and big data management. And Jay, we'll start with you.
Okay, I work for Sprint, and we partner with Computer Science Corporation. We have an exclusive offering with them to provide cloud infrastructure as a service offerings. And my responsibility is for the Northeast U.S., and there are a lot of customers up in my patch. And right now I'm actually dealing with a software internet provider of e-commerce that does mostly e-commerce sites for financial opportunities, financial companies out there. And they've been taking us through some of their spikes in their marketplace, and it's just absolutely astounding, you know, to see in real time as they set up an offering for a specific bank, maybe a particular rate on a mortgage or something along those lines. It goes from, you know, almost nothing to, you know, right off the chart as far as demand. And it's very, very hard for them to anticipate whether this offering is going to be responded to in a positive way or whether it's just going to be ignored by the market. So, you know, they're really looking for solutions around this. I've been taking lots of notes.
Thanks, Jay. Jerry?
I'm Jerry Stegmeier. I'm an attorney at Wilson, Sonsini, Goodrich & Rosati in Washington, D.C. Our firm was founded in Silicon Valley almost 50 years ago. And some of our clients in the early days, and to give you sort of a sense of grounding in our work in the technology space, we organized Apple and took them public. We organized Sun Microsystems and took them public. We organized Google and took them public. And most recently, we're sort of celebrating taking Twitter to market. We represent 55% of the public companies in Silicon Valley and 65% of the venture-backed software companies in the United States. In terms of my particular practice, and I think the easiest way to think about what I do, is a lot of lawyers are litigators, deal guys, or regulatory lawyers. I focus on a particular domain, and my hypothesis is that information is the asset class of the 21st century. And so if you want to figure out how to collect, use, disclose, monitor, monetize information, and transform data into information, and then knowledge, and ultimately to wisdom, that's what I help people do. And the easiest way to sort of find that or think about that visually, my Twitter handle is ones and zeros lawyer. So 1S and 0S lawyer is what I do. And I've been doing this for a long, long time. And there are a lot of companies. One of the most interesting things that I see in this slide sort of coming up, and especially the most recent presentation, is what we saw there was a whole bunch of data, but that data was used to go to information, and frankly, taking it a step forward, or, you know, to knowledge and to wisdom. And most organizations, in my view, are barely at data, maybe at information, but are a long way from knowledge and wisdom. And that's really the transformation that we're seeing. That's one of the things I help enterprises do.
Thanks a lot, Jerry. All right, our first question for our entire panel. What did you hear in the keynotes presented by our other speakers today regarding mobile storage, lowering latency, or hyperelasticity that provides the greatest benefits to the end user? Where is the most value derived from using cloud-based solutions today? And we'll start with Melody.
Well, I thought it was interesting. I thought all the other presentations were really interesting, but the thing that really caught my ear was the, you know, from Quio, talking about, you know, just pay for what you use and getting it down, in the cases of Europe, to a 6-second billing increment. I mean, that's powerful, right? Talk about being able to fine-tune a business case. Talk about being able to micro-engineer a service. I mean, that's really huge from the, you know, from the storage end of it. And like, I mean, I think everybody in the room might agree that cloud is a, you know, an outsourcing strategy, both from a technology as well as a business side of it. And I think being able to use and consume in those small increments, but yet guarantee, you know, high availability or, you know, great service, really piqued my interest.
I have to agree. We've been struggling with a lot of customers as far as, you know, the cloud offers that agility and instant and infinite availability of resources. But how do you take those resources and react in a timely fashion into, you know, real-time demands for the customer? And as I said, I have a customer right now that has, you know, has these needs, and, you know, they're not solved as far as I know, you know, from solutions that are readily available out of a box today. You know, they're struggling with developing their own software for their marketing tools that are going to react to that, but then how do you incorporate that so it really works with the APIs of the cloud so that it can happen really fast. The other side, from a wireless device, you know, the tablet world has changed the marketplace. I meet with CIOs, CFOs every day of the week, and, you know, in some respects they're really unhappy because they've lost control over the desktop world and everybody's bringing their own device to work. But the reality of the fact is, you know, they're really now facing the fact that they've got these portable devices and they have a lot of legacy IT environments in-house, and they're trying to figure out how do we take this legacy IT, which still works real well, but really get it out onto a wireless device that makes it easy for the user to use. So HTML5 front ends, all of those things are really being investigated by a lot of my customers, financial services customers especially, because they're trying to figure out how to become easier to do business with. And Sprint being, you know, in the wireline business, in the cloud business, in the wireless business, all of these things kind of come together in our world. So definitely interesting information.
Thanks, Jay.
Andy?
I guess I'll pile on a bit in terms of the hyperelasticity thing was what intrigued me. Having been a networking guy for so long, you know, it's clear there's much more advancement in the computing world in terms of flexibility and elasticity, whereas in the networking world, by contrast, there's pretty much been two extremes. You can either buy a private build-it-yourself network or, you know, the next best thing, a private MPLS network from AT&T or Verizon, or you can...
or Sprint.
I was talking about the guys who weren't as good, right? Or you can, you know, take your chances with the public internet. And so, you know, content delivery networks now, application delivery networks and delivering network as a service and cloud network as a service like we do is actually this third way. And so I won't pretend that it's as instantaneously flexible as hyperelasticity because it's not. But it gives you a way to focus on application performance and acceleration that hasn't existed in the networking world. Now, the truth is, if all your users are in the United States, you probably don't need this. If you have global users, though, then it's a capability fairly similar that you just literally can't find anyplace else.
So I was actually struggling up until now to figure out what the relevance for my my presentation was on this particular panel being about mobile, but it turns out that it is actually super relevant because in that particular platform, I was talking about the demographic being the 50 plus, you know, alternate moviegoers, more cultured people that were wanted to watch documentaries. And here suddenly, this platform was subjected with a demographic that was younger, trending more, to the younger end.
Pearl Jam fans are cultured and educated. And
but the interesting thing was
Pearl Jam, okay.
When we looked at it, the majority of them were actually accessing the site through a mobile.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so they got a tweet. And when you get the tweet, you don't wait till, I got a tweet. I'll wait till I get home and fire up my desktop computer. No, I'll respond to it straight away. And they respond. That's why it came, all of those events were able to come to arrive together within seconds of that tweet going out. And so anybody who's developing a platform that's not aware of mobile and gearing their site to offer up, first of all, detect this visitor's coming from a mobile device and offer up a mobile-friendly version of the site that's not encumbered with all the rich media, will not be able to offer page load times that are acceptable. And so I think it is super relevant. And the more that we can find solutions to that are sensitive to these mobile users, the better experience we're going to offer.
Thanks, Risa.
I was actually really stunned, and I think this is a great question because I really like coming to conferences like this, in particular as a lawyer, because I like to be in rooms with non-lawyers. It causes me to think in a different way. And actually, that's probably not unique to me, right? All of you probably prefer to be in rooms that don't have a bunch of lawyers as well. So I get it. And that's why I may be more like you than I am like them. But the thing that struck me, and I don't know if you guys have heard of a conference called DFRAG in Colorado. If you get a chance, I'd encourage you to go. And it's a bunch of technologists and investors and people just thinking about things differently. And last year, I heard a talk by the CEO of a company called Twilio, and he talked about softwareization. And essentially, his hypothesis, and I don't think it was unique to him, was that we could solve any problem if we throw software at it. You know, then that's really something where the world is changing, that software can solve problems. And I'll tie this back to what we heard today. So we represent 42% of the companies that have received funding to do clean tech and energy efficiency. And literally billions of dollars have been sunk into making batteries better. And I was listening to this talk and I thought, okay, I'm waiting for the next team that comes through my door that says, well, I have software tools that will optimize battery life dynamically using AI across, you know, crowdsourced user populations. And by the way, if any of you start that company, come and ask me for investment. But I really was thinking about that as a problem, right? Because when we think about Moore's Law, and we think about all these things that are getting better and better and better, batteries aren't on that list. They're not getting better. So fundamentally, we have this constraint. Mm-hmm. So that was really the insight, if you will, for me, was to think about the constraints on mobile and the constraints on big data and the constraints on everything being real time, essentially being limited by the capacity of batteries. And I thought, well, what if we could solve that with software? Mm-hmm. So that was where, you know. And the last thing is, I like to get in rooms with a bunch of smart people like you all and maybe have one or two small thoughts. So that's my small thought for the day.
Thanks, Jerry. My phone actually just died while you were speaking. Next question. We'll start with Andy for this one. What did you hear in the keynotes from the other speakers or in the answers we just heard from your other fellow panelists about the advantages of mobile, cloud, or big data solutions with which you most disagree? And why? Which aspect of mobile or big data is currently the least subject to improvement from cloud computing, minus batteries, of course?
Well, I think I'll answer the second question. I have trouble with the first and disagreeing, but enterprise apps are a lot harder to take advantage of cloud than is e-commerce or consumer-based apps, and partly because you don't see the kind of spike, so you don't get that advantage. But it's largely because enterprise IT managers are used to the, you know, nobody ever got fired for buying IBM, nobody ever got fired for buying Cisco, nobody ever got fired for buying AT&T, Verizon, or Sprint. So to take advantage of cloud on the computing side of enterprise IT, you've got to have a network that's reliable and that works into the cloud. But that really hasn't existed yet. And so that's one of the things. It wasn't the primary thing we set out to do, but by the nature of our technology and building it based on the cloud, you know, we leverage the internet ecosystem to make networking better. So we deliver, you know, network as a service, which kind of seems, and I'm not talking about LANs, kind of seems silly, but it's not. it's a way to get you a much better network to deliver you that reliable, predictable network so that you can take advantage of the cloud for computing.
Razor, we'll go to you.
Well, I haven't found much that I disagree with, but something that's kind of dropped from the list of talking points over the last few years is some hybrid, some network hybrid between TCP/IP, single, you know, point-to-point sessions, and broadcast, and somehow multicast has dropped off the agenda. Do you remember when it was like going to be the savior? Multicast maybe 10 years ago, and I just want to put that back on people's agendas, and somehow we need to figure it out either between the mobile carriers or the network providers, but somehow multicast needs to come back onto the agenda. I think it could be a huge cost saver. Quite often people are streaming the identical service, and why would there be 3 million copies of it going out at the same time when it could be a lot fewer? So that's my little nugget.
Thanks, Reza. Jerry, back to you.
So I don't know exactly that I have something that I'll disagree with, but something in particular. The discussion of the cellular model of going from 6 minute increments to 3 minute increments to 1 minute increments. And if you saw that graphic that was up there, and I think it was referred to as a cost, and it was pink. And so that if you used only 1 minute and you got charged for 6 minutes, that was a cost. I reacted very viscerally, because I actually saw that as profit, because I'm a lawyer and I sell my time in 6 minute increments. And I actually want to move back to selling quarters of an hour or half an hour. And there's actually an insight here, and I think it relates to data more so than compute or computing or mobile. And that is, every 6 minute increment isn't equal. Right. So if we looked across that curve in a dynamic way, you know, across that range of time from moment one to moment X, there was a time where that computing power was far more valuable. And there's an opportunity cost to having that computing power available, whether you use it efficiently or not. And so I often think about this as sort of, we think about things, you know, there's an x-axis and a y-axis, and the easiest thing to forget is there's a z-axis, right, one that's in here. And so I thought of that as, I'll softly disagree with the cost, you know, characterization, because in many instances, it's just a matter of figuring out what's the most efficient way to deliver something, and it's been, you know, 6 minutes, 1 minute, 1 hour up to this point. But I thought it was very thoughtful.
Can I quickly respond to that? So I think that you're absolutely right. If there was a differentiated level of service from the cloud provider, let's say they were to provide some nodes that were like fast twitch muscles that were maybe completely RAM-based, I'd be prepared to pay for that and pay a lot more for that if I was only charged for them by the minute or by the few seconds that I have them on. I would architect my system so that that flood of response, that windfall of traffic that came in, I'd be able to reap all the rewards from that, and then I'd let that go and then continue along with my more predictable, slow varying auto-scaling.
So if I may, the reason why this was so thought-provoking is I do a lot of security breaches. And when you first call me and your network is under attack, I refer to that as the golden hour. And what I'll tell you in that first hour is worth about $10,000. And you might not think it's worth $10,000, but trust me, it is. But I sell my time for $640 an hour. And my partners, frankly, would never let me say, well, I would be delighted to talk to you, Tom, or Jay, I'm so happy to help you. Wire $10,000 and we can talk. It just doesn't work that way. And so, your clarification, your point is exactly, that's thought-provoking for me.
Thanks a lot. Melody?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it really caught my attention too, the, you know, the how to price these spikes. I mean, first of all, how marvelous it is to have technology to accommodate the spikes, but then again, how to, you know, how to price that. And I think I would agree that it's right on that if you're engineering for, you know, certain low level and your average is this, but then, you know, at certain rare points it's really high, then that overage time, if you want to call it that, I mean, just look at your billing from, you know, your service provider, your wireless or whatever. If you're buying a certain data plan, but then you're going over, those overage minutes or overage kilobytes are much more costly than the bulk that you bought at the bottom. So I think they're of higher value. I thought it was also interesting, just from a business planning model, that, you know, it wasn't the Black Friday that everybody thought for, you know, oh, these old 50-year-olds. Mm-hmm. Doesn't it piss you off that he categorizes us like that? You know, they're just watching old documentaries, whatever. But it was an uncontrollable three tweets, you know, from a demographic they didn't even foresee that caused it. And let me tell you, in my experience, it's always that way. You think you know that demographic. You think you've got it planned. Oh, Mother's Day. Oh, Black Friday. Oh, you know, half off on Depends undergarments for these 50-year-olds. But I got to tell you, it's something that you didn't see coming. Something organic, something real-time, something, you know, whatever that you didn't see coming. And it's cool that technology is available to prepare you for that. But I think the pricing thing is a very provocative and interesting way to think about. Personally, I mean, if you're experiencing these once a year or once a season spikes and so forth, but you want to be prepared and you don't want to be the next Obamacare website experience, then wouldn't it be worth a premium of some sort to pay?
It's like insurance.
Yeah, it's an insurance. Yeah, you transfer the risk, you know, to get the good user experience. So.
Thanks, Valley. Yeah. We'll finish with Jay for this question.
Now, my perspective is, you know, it comes down to a completely well-balanced system. So when your cloud environment is designed, your portal environment is designed, all of your software is put together to be able to be responsive, and you have great servers and storage and all like that, there's also this other piece, which is the connection between you and the customer. It's the network. And I'm an old employee of Sun, and we had McNeely, who was our CEO for many years, always, you know, talked about the, you know, the network is the computer. And the reality of the fact is, you know, maybe 14, 15 years ago, he was correct. We just didn't have the bandwidth at the time to actually take his vision and make it into what's happening today. But the reality of the fact is, working for a network company, as I've only spent about a year here, but I'm really beginning to see what the capabilities of, like, on our MPLS network is able to do, and the ability that we can provide to the customer to be able to flex that bandwidth for these types of events. So you really need to have a completely well-architected solution that's not only, like in our case, we're working with CSC and they're providing infrastructure as a service. But you really have to take the networking side of that and put it together so that the two pieces are able to flux in real time to what your customer requirements are. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of detail in that I don't think a lot of people have done a lot of studies on yet, as far as really understanding what mm-hmm. what the application requirements, based upon how many users, what that's going to do to the bandwidth that I've signed up for relative to what I might need down the road. Because I'm seeing those kind of discussions with my customers now.
So, Jay, our last question, we'll start with Reza for this one. What can mobile cloud computing and the big data end users or providers of solutions, or each of these groups, do together to further advance cloud adoption in this arena, and how do we make the most progress?
Well, I think we should set a challenge. I think we should set a challenge for the cloud providers. And you know what I'm going to ask for. And Tom's there, so, and the other guys, Vijay, who do we have? We had representatives from Microsoft Azure and AWS in the conference next door. And I think all three of you kind of skirted the question around about pricing. So this is something that us as representatives of the industry are going to lobby, that it's high time we move to sub-hour billing. And those providers that are still providing Linux instances that take 15 minutes to boot, I'm sorry, you're not going to get the business for consumer-facing platforms because you just lose us money. So I hope you listen to that.
Thanks, Reza. Jerry?
Fire the lawyers that come at this from a sourcing background. And what I mean there is, you know, inherently most of these offerings, you know, come with, you know, an off-the-rack approach. It's not bespoke. And so if the folks that are trying to assist the customers are thinking about everything from this bespoke perspective, they're just not getting it from the outset or the beginning, which isn't to say you can't have, you know, appropriate contractual protections. You know, but if you go to TJ Maxx and you buy a suit, that's different than having the tailor come to your office and spec you up and measure and have it built. And you'd have used a different kind of resource to get that done from a business negotiation standpoint. And I'll give you a finer specific point on this. Privacy and data security exhibits. I can't tell you how many SaaS or infrastructure as a service companies, you know, companies that I have that get literally a, you know, 500-page questionnaire from a customer who wants to, you know, tire kick every aspect of the network security environment. And that's appropriate from, you know, sort of a risk management, they have a responsibility. But, you know, think about that, and then think about, you know, you go into the TJ Maxx and you start to complain, you know, gee, the salesman isn't very attentive here. Normally they bring me champagne when they're gonna measure me for the suit, right? It's not what you're necessarily buying. So, you know, maybe that's way inside, but it's something we see a lot
of. Thanks, Jerry. Melody? Well,
the thing that occurs to me that I just put on the table to kick around is getting together as an industry to do best practices around this so that every time, you know, an enterprise goes out to do an application, they don't have to do their own 500-page survey on security or on coding or whatever. What about an industry approach that takes into account best practices for, you know, the network plus cloud model? I thought Jay had a right on point about it. It's not just the cloud. You can have a bazillion petabytes there. As long, if you don't have a network pipe to get it, then, you know, you're up the creek. But you've got to have best practices against both. What about best practices on application coding that take into account, you know, battery life, session persistence, security? I mean, certainly we've seen other industry groups such as OWASP do things against security. We've seen, you know, different cloud groups do things about cloud security. I think there can be a more of a ubiquitous one for cloud computing that takes into account billing models and all the rest and maybe publishes. Wouldn't it be great if in a couple of years' time we sat in the same conference and we say, oh, well, I'm going to, you know, spin up a cool new mobile app and I'm really confident about it. And guess what? It's taking me a fraction of the time to do it because my provider is CCA certified on these different practices. And I don't have to put out a 500-page security brochure or a questionnaire or a 500-page, you know, questionnaire against billing and negotiate each and every little deal. You know, if there was an industry checkbox that, you know, they've been audited and comply to a certain set of best practices that are agreed as best, I think, you know, that would go a very long way. Because to Jerry's point, I've been on the receiving end of those 500-page security questionnaires, and I mean, they are necessary, but they're not fun, and why do we keep repeating that when we could have a, you know, a structured process against it?
Thanks, Bobby. Jay?
I guess from my perspective, I meet with customers every day of the week usually, and I think the cloud industry has, you know, the way we've grown up, we've kind of, each one of us seems to have taken a special pride in making our billing model a little bit different than the next guy's, and to the point where customers are having a really hard time trying to figure out, you know, what does it really cost for me to take my application and put it in the cloud. And, you know, at the end of the day, there's a lot of Yeah, I think we're hurting ourselves more than we're helping ourselves, because customers in many cases are afraid to make a move because they really don't understand what the costs are between company A, B, and C. You know, and at the end of the day, an awful lot of what we're bringing to the table is, you know, CPU, RAM, storage metrics that we're charging for. Certainly, the portal has a value add, but I think in the long run, we need to really try to make this a little bit less complicated for the customer in the buying process and in evaluating what they're getting. That's just my thought, because I listen to an awful lot of complaining from, you know, C-level executives who are having a hard time figuring this out.
Thanks, Jay. Andy?
So I'm actually going to take sort of the countervailing viewpoint and almost put in essentially a plug for shows like this and for conferences. I think we're not in the IBM builds it all world anymore, or AT&T builds it all world anymore, or Cisco builds it all world anymore, or even, frankly, Google. I think that you need to, as customers, have to learn about not just computing and not just network. You know, our eyes open, you know, we think of page load times and we focus, well, of course it's the network, and here's how we can make the network better. Except it's not. And I'm sure computing folks think the same thing. Oh, your page load times have nothing to do with where people are. The brave new world of cloud computing offers tons and tons of advantages, but it means computing guys need to learn more about the network, networking guys need to learn more about computing, we all need to learn more about storage and security. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the way it's going to be. And I think if you don't end up learning more about other things, then you're not going to succeed as much as you can. And hoping an industry consortium fix it is something for 2037 or not.
Thanks, Andy. Does anyone have any questions for any of our panelists? We'll have a short Q&A session.
Yes. Yeah, I just thought, raising your presentation about, you know, slipping times on Linux instances and sort of the sub-one-hour
monetization was very interesting. Wanted to get your take on why some other cloud platform hasn't emerged to address those needs, or why we can't just get access to that generic compute resource, which is available in public cloud platforms, and build a solution to do exactly what you think needs to be done. Wanted to get your take on, is there room for another cloud platform to address some of the deficiencies you see there, especially for the mobile B2C cloud app? And secondarily, could we do it on the existing cloud platforms? Are they open enough?
Yeah, so, well, it turns out Microsoft Azure, I mean, they're late to the market, and so they had to do something. And they announced one-minute billing. They still have Windows servers that take many, many minutes to boot up before you get a prompt. And so that doesn't really help the issue. I think the provider that actually has both the fast booting nodes and the more progressive billing is Google. And so that's interesting. They're also, you know, latecomers to the space, and so they obviously are seeing that this is the trend. And so for that portion of your business that's B2C, that has to respond to random spiky events and wants to reap all the rewards of those windfall occurrences, you really need to have something like that. Now, there are other ways of skinning this cat. You can, through architectural changes, not just relying on your cloud provider, you can actually break up your app to, you know, much like your doctor's office does, is say, hello, the doctor's office, can you hold? Hello, the doctor's office, can you hold? And so basically dealing with all those incoming sessions, quickly not dropping them and giving a failure response, but giving them maybe a degraded, quicker response, and then coming back and filling in later on. Now, that's a lot tougher and more expensive to architect, and this is really an appeal for the cloud providers to actually come to the aid of platforms to be able to handle this hyper-elasticity condition.
So in the chart, there was two or three things that you pointed out as problems, right? One was the latency to spin up the environment. The other one was
the billing increments.
Yeah.
There's a third component that's really been bothering me that we didn't talk about.
Okay.
Why didn't the C level not cap spending? So if traffic is directly proportionate to revenue, how do you have a tech C level that's like, oh, we have to cap it? Because let's say all that other stuff worked.
Yeah.
You still, the primary driver of that failure was this one person capping the spending.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? but the thing is, this is a CTO talking to a CFO, and he says, okay, give me 100% guarantee that this is not a denial of service attack. And that, give me a written guarantee that I'm actually going to convert all of those visitors to buyers at the rate that I normally do. And this was a fabulous, fabulously performing site. It had like a 12% conversion rate because all these people that were coming to the site were very committed buyers. And if you believed, you know, if you drank the Kool-Aid and believed that that 12% was going to sustain for all traffic conditions, then that's great. But he said, no, this is the maximum that I'm going to authorize. And in fact, many cloud providers actually clamp you. You actually have to say how many instances you're going to spin up to within a certain case. AWS does exactly the same. So if it's not your CFO clamping you, it is going to be your cloud provider clamps you.
Well, but the other thing you got to keep in mind, right, because I work on the risk side, and we often talk about black swan events, but the black skunk event there, right, is that it turns out that the 50-plus and 40-plus folks will still listen to Pearl Jam and use Twitter.
Yeah.
Right? So on the expenditure piece, because I see, I can't tell you how many times I've seen the CISO quit because they can't get resources, right? They say, I own this function and I'm under-resourced. And essentially, the dynamic that happens is someone on the risk management function says, we'll be mapped for, you know, this area of the curve. And if it's out on either end, then it is what it is and we'll deal with it when it happens.
Right.
You know, and so what I say to the clients is, mistakes are okay, make them on purpose. And then, you know, they'll learn and they'll resource after.
That's right. My CFO says, we'll burn that bridge when we get to it.
Yeah. Exactly.
just a comment on that from a cloud provider perspective. What you said is exactly true. There are rate limits in place with Rackspace. Those rate limits are configurable, but it takes a conscious decision between the customer and Rackspace to do that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The same thing in my world. Yeah, because it also comes down to a matter of planning for resources behind. I mean, you know, you have infinite resources, but those infinite resources actually have to be planned for on the cloud provider's perspective and racked and stacked and put in place. And so there is that piece that does come into play.
Infinite is perspective.
Yes.
Infinite in the long run, semi-infinite in the midterm, and finite in the short term.
Mm-hmm. And scarce in the immediate term.
And of course, as Yogi Berra said, the future is really hard to predict when it's about the future.
Anyone else have any questions for our panelists? Two more rounds of applause.
It is 2 minutes after 3 o'clock. We have about a 28-minute break at 3:30. We'll join back in here for another group of panelists.
Did you have a card?